But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so it's county final season for sure now, lads. If it's not a if a club has a match this weekend, it's not a county final. We're not going to mention it because there's enough county finals, and we have to get through all the news of the week as well. So we're going to start with the Kilkenny county final, Ballyhale Shamrocks against O'Loughlin Gaels. O'Loughlin Gaels won their last county title in 2018. They beat Ballyhale Shamrocks, so that's a different Ballyhale Shamrocks team to the one it is now, because they're going through a little bit of transition. They didn't even make the county final in 2019, and then Henry came in and the under-20s came up through, and we know what they're like now. So, like, I mean, last year's final was a one-sided one. This is on TG Cahir at 1:30. You better get the Sunday dinner into you nice and early. You can have a bit of dessert watching this one. One-sided one, Niall?
I think, yeah, it was 2016
Well, can I just say I forgot my glasses? So if anyone's looking at this, and if I make a lot of mistakes, more mistakes than usual, I left my bag at home and I've no glasses. So I'm struggling to read that bloody screen.
We'll let you away with that one. So, no, yeah, 2016, like, I'd say Ballyhale don't lose county finals too often. Like, so maybe, like, O'Loughlin Gaels, they'll definitely be going into this one as underdogs. But having beaten them in 2016, I know there's five players who played in that 2016 final who are still there.
Only like, five?
Yeah, I think it's only five. And they've Paddy Deegan, Hugh Lawler are still there. We'll obviously be watching Paddy Deegan. This is Paddy.
Versus Joey Holden.
Paddy Deegan, watch, yeah.
Holden will put manners on Deegan, I reckon.
I'm telling you, that'd be a good one to watch out for. And like O'Loughlin Gaels, like, obviously they're a town team in Kilkenny, so they're going to be good anyway, but they were in the intermediate quarter final in Kilkenny this year as well. Like, that's their second team, like, which shows the strength and depth that they have, like, because we know how competitive that grade is as well. And like, they had a great win over Tullerone. Like, Tullerone had played well all year the last day, so they'll be coming in with a small bit of confidence. But you just always worry when it's Ballyhale that if they turn on the style like they did last year against Dixborough, that it could be a bit of a rout. Like.
Yeah, hammered Dixborough. There'll have to be a change of jerseys here too, won't there?
Just the jerseys are the exact same. Thinking it, yeah. So someone will be wearing the green.
Green, yeah. Like Tullerone went all green with a sash. The other match on TG Cahir, Lee, is at 3:15. It's St Eunan's versus Naomh Connell. Now, I love Naomh Connell. I respect Naomh Connell. I can't watch Naomh Connell. That's the only problem I have with them. They're playing Eunan's, and Eunan's are going for a double, which is, we're talking a lot about dual clubs, and you know, you made the point, Lee, you know, it's not always easy to do it when the interest isn't there, you know, up in Ulster sometimes in the hurling. Eunan's, Donegal not known as a hurling stronghold, but Eunan's won a county title they weren't expected to win last weekend, and are now going for the double.
Yeah, and fair play to them. I mean, like you say, it isn't really a thing up here in Ulster, but they've shocked everyone, and the club itself will have some real momentum behind that. I'm not too sure how many dual players are involved, but just as a community, they just must, you know, have serious belief within themselves. I know what you mean by Naomh Connell, like, in the way that they play football, it can be a bit cagey, a bit boring, but you always get at least one moment of magic from Kieran Thompson. I think it was Kilkear last time in the quarterfinal or the semi-final. He took a short sideline, he used it as a 1-2, and then he just curled over this absolute beauty. I mean, and at that point of the match, it was so boring, so cagey. It was teeming down with rain. But that little moment, that, you know, it really spurted me up anyway, and it made me think, oh, maybe this is worth watching. So tune in for that at least.
Yeah, I think I'd nodded off for that one then, so I missed it. I'm Naomh Connell highlights. I love them, absolutely love them. You just see the TG Cahir highlights or on TGBO or GABO on TG Cahir, and you've enough. You know how many dual players Eunan's have. You're upset. You're as obsessed about this as I am now.
Yeah, we're looking at it every week now, and it's the two boys for Eunan's, two boys in the starting team anyway. They're Kevin Keeley and Sean McVeigh as well. So they'll be coming in here with a lot of confidence, you know, having won that.
They will, exactly. Other county final in Laois, we're talking about dual players. There'll be no dual players in these two clubs unless they're playing a bit of Junior C or Junior D. Boris Kilcotton versus Clock Ballacolla. This is a repeat of last year's final that was played earlier this year, which Clock Ballacolla won. Boris Kilcotton have lost the last two finals, the last 2 years ago to Rathdowney. Interesting one, Clock Ballacolla manager is Declan Laffin, and you'll know him, Niall. He managed Loughmore Castellini to a county a double, 2013, and won another two footballs, 14 and 16. He managed both teams, as is the custom in Loughmore Castellini. He'll only be managing one team in Clock Ballacolla. He needn't worry about being overworked over there.
Yeah, sure, he'll find it very easy to win when he just has one coach focus on it. There's not too much football in Clock Ballacolla, I'd say, is there?
No. There certainly isn't.
But yeah, no, the name...
He's highly rated manager in Tip.
Like, I hadn't known too much... I hadn't known that he was the Clock Ballacolla manager until you mentioned to me this morning, but the name just instantly kind of sprang to mind when you said it, because, like, that was such an iconic achievement for Loughmore to win the two, the hurling, the football in Tipperary in 2013. And I just kind of remember him at the time. He just seemed like a great character, a lad who was a great talker. And sure, he obviously got the best out of the Loughmore players, and he's getting the best out of Clock Ballacolla now. So he's doing well with them too.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. Another county final is the Kildare county final, Naas versus Sarsfield. A little birdie told me that you pronounce Naas as Nass, Lee, here on one of the shows before, which is probably the worst pronunciation I've ever heard, which probably outdoes any terrible pronunciation I've ever done.
Oh God, don't throw that to me. Did I say Nass? I'm going to claim that's a northern thing. Yeah, I can say that.
Niall is the little birdie. I didn't hear that.
Niall, ratting me out and everything. Now I forget which one's the right one. Say it. Nace. I've had it now.
In your favor, in your defense, Lee, they haven't won a county title since it's 91. And you weren't born then.
Yeah, it's entirely their fault. I'm only hearing about them now. But yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that I've heard about them, you know, because they've got this fantastic story, obviously, going on. You know, they don't have a manager. They're in the final for the first time in so many years. And like, you know, for a neutral point of view, I'm sure in Kildare it's a different story, but totally from a neutral point of view, you just want to see the end of that story, you know, this sort of myth of this team that won the whole championship without a manager.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, some information you got, Niall, on the management thing is Eamon Callaghan said he's the best manager he ever had. Maybe that's at club level.
At club, he said, yeah, well, I was talking to two lads. I was kind of doing a piece on Eamon Callaghan yesterday, and I was talking to the Naas PRO, and he's a bit of a historian as well, Lee McManus, and he sort of educated me on all sorts of facts about Eamon Callaghan. He told me that he's played against every single county in Ireland, including Kilkenny. He played against Kilkenny in a minor challenge game as well. And he was telling me he's the highest appearances. He's played in two millenniums for Naas and Everton. He actually made his debut for Naas in 99 against Sarsfields, and he scored 1-3 that day. So, you know, it's a great story, in fairness, the Naas story. And, like, the same fella, I was talking to Johnny Dyle yesterday about Callaghan as well, and he just told me the minute he heard that the manager, Paul Kelly, was gone from Naas, he said there was no alarm bells ringing for him about Naas, because he said Eamon Callaghan is the calmest man he's ever come across. He said when they were in, he said there was a little bit of controversy after Kieran McGeaney left Kildare, and he said Eamon Callaghan was the captain at the time, and he was the main man in sort of resolving that. And he's the captain of the Naas team this weekend. So, like, a great man, a great leader for them. And, like, they're a young team, so, you know, he's going to be the man driving them on.
Yeah, so they've won three of the last minor finals. They're up and coming. Obviously, Derek Irwin, Alex Burney, these young lads have come through. That's it. They've obviously copped on with their underage. They're a huge town. Like, I mean, the Newbridge is able to flourish with Sarsfields and Moorfield. And Naas, you know, going nowhere since 1991 until they kind of copped on. Amazingly, Naas and Newbridge, Naas and Sarsfields have not met in a county final since 1904. And Sarsfields were called Rosebery back then in 1904. So it's just there's a bit of a novelty about Naas versus Newbridge, you know, when it doesn't happen all that often, and Naas versus Sarsfields. My information, and this is coming from a Newbridge side, from a couple of different Newbridge sides, is that the people from Naas look down on Newbridge. They're a little bit more cosmopolitan, have nicer restaurants, closer to Dublin, and they look down their noses at Newbridge. So by Jesus, those Sarsfields lads won't... We'll have to get stuck into them for that. I'd love if this one was on the television, to be honest with you, instead of Unions and Niamh Connell.
Yeah, like, we've seen Niamh Connell only two
weeks
ago.
It's on at two. It's clashing with the hurling now rather than the football.
I just love to see that Naas game, just the whole story. It's probably the biggest story of the club season so far, the way that they've gone so far without the manager. But, like, it definitely is the... the young players who are kind of making the difference for Naas. Like they've won, as you said, they've won the three of the last five minors, but apparently those two lads, Kerwin and Alex Byrne, like they're the two, like these are the two forwards that everyone in Kildare is talking about. You know, Byrne was meant to be an absolutely outstanding minor, and they've already played, they played for Kildare in the Leinster final against Dublin this year. So, and they've taken the pressure as well off Eamon Callaghan. Like he's not kind of the marked man, and as we've seen, like he's kind of flourishing. He's less kind of less attention on him maybe, but they're saying he's playing the football of his life.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn of who want, I want to win that one, because I want Naas to win it because they haven't won it in a while and Sarsfields have a sash. So it's kind of I'm stuck between two, a rock and a hard place. Other county final this weekend is the Meath county final, Dunboyne versus Wolfetones. I'm definitely up for Wolfetones in this one. This is Keane Ward's team, one of my best ever pundits here on the show. He's absolutely flying it. Wolfetones last won it in 2006. Hope I'm reading that well off my script that I can barely see. Dunboyne last won it in 2018. Funny one here, there was a sign put up outside the Wolfetones village. And it was like you always get is kind of, you know, cheeky signs. Jeez, I've seen it down through the years in Leash. You know, as you're driving out of one town and into the other, there'd be some kind of wind up sign. But anyways, someone from the Wolfetones put up best of luck for the Wolfetones against the Dubs this Sunday, because Dunboyne have two Dublin players, the Lowndes brothers, Eric Lowndes brothers. And would you believe, Lee, like there's people from Dunboyne getting offended about this on Twitter. I've seen some tweets. It's like, you know, Jesus, like we can all have the bit of crack, but we're proud Mead men and we're not Dubs. It's like, Jesus, would you ever fucking cop on?
I think it's funny that like being called a Dub is the worst thing a Mead man
well,
can
it,
be called.
Well, it is, it is.
But that's they take that so personally. Yeah, but I understand what you mean, because the Wolfetones even, they released a statement and stuff like distancing themselves from it and whatever. I don't know. I think sometimes with these finals, there maybe just, maybe there just was no controversy about it. So there was nothing really, you know, they needed something to help boil it over and to really raise the tempo up a little bit. But the Wolfetones v. the Dubliners would have been a good
sign. That'd be a serious, a serious rivalry there. Derry final, Slochnaill versus the Glen, Lee. I never realised the Glen have never won it.
Yeah, no, they've never won it, and it's just Glenn. It's not the Glenn. Sorry, I'm the guy that has to correct everyone on the team names, as we know. But no, Glenn have never won it, which is remarkable, thinking like because of all the success they've had. And it's sort of a similar story, because they'd have won, I think they won three Ulster minor titles in a row, and everyone was saying, and the Glenn senior team at that stage were in intermediate, and they were all saying, when these players all come through, like the likes of Conor Glass and Danny Tallon and stuff, and when they start to play senior football, you know, they'll become a real force. And they got to the final in 2019, but they look an even better force again this year, and against big time rivals, Slochnaill.
So they're big time rivals, without and Glenn have never won it. Don't really sound like rivals to me.
Oh, well, maybe it's more in a Glenn point of view, to be fair. It's just because they're both from Mahara, so they share, or their neighbouring villages, or a derby, whatever way you want to call it.
Right.
But
Slochnaill always win.
Thus far, yeah. But I don't know, I'm very sympathetic towards Glenn. My dad's actually from Slochnaill. He's not very interested in football, though. But very sympathetic towards Glenn. I kind of hope they do it.
Not interested in football, in the greatest dual club in the country.
I know, honestly. I think it's... And there's no talking to him. He's more interested in cars. Well, it's a whole different story, Willie. We'll get on.
Okay, we're moving on. These are the only semi-finals I want to mention. This is the Cork Hurling semi-finals. There's semi-finals in Dublin football. There's semi-finals in Galway Hurling. There's semi-finals in Mayo football. There's semi-finals in Cork Hurling. All huge games, but like I said, we wanted to focus just on giving a mention to the county finals. So Glen Rovers play Sarsfields. The reason this is interesting, I wanted to mention it, is because how do we miss this on one of the Monday shows? Patrick Horgan was sent off in a quarter final against Imokilly, who are a huge area team down there, who have been winning it. Have they won the last two or three in a row? And Glen Rovers, Patrick Horgan was sent off in the first half, and Glen Rovers still beat Imokilly. And he got sent off for an off-the-ball incident. Sounds very out of character for Patrick Horgan, but he's after getting it off. So he's available now for the semi-final. So God knows what went on there.
Yeah, I've seen a few of the Sarsfields people. I don't think they're too happy. They're like, oh, it's always going to happen. The big player always gets off for the big game. But like, No, we don't know too much about it, like, because it was an apparently it was an off the ball incident, and the umpire was the man who brought the referee's attention to it. But I suppose when you haven't seen it and when you haven't been there, there's not much you can say. But it's fairly out of character for Patrick Horgan to get involved in anything like that. And I suppose it's a huge boost for Glen Rovers, isn't it? Like, what a player! Like, if they were to be without him, geez, what like Glen Rovers without Patrick Horgan, it's not the same. Like, so it's a huge boost for them, and it's definitely going to make it a little bit more difficult for Sarsfield.
This is what I hate in these matches, is when you're the county star, and I can only imagine Patrick Horgan. Like, he's in the top players that's ever played hurling. He's back playing for his club. He's in a quarter final. He's in corner forward. You know, let's be honest, in a club match, any county player is getting, you know, blackguarded off the ball. Do you wait until the referee sees it, or do you take the law into your own hands and maybe, you know, you have to put manners on a ladder. He's not going to leave you alone. He's going to see you as a big, you know, baby that can't handle himself. And maybe, who knows what happened? It's not like Patrick Horgan even to retaliate, though. That's the thing. But it's interesting. He got sent off, but Glen Rovers won. But anyways, he's back. So that's the main thing. We'll leave it there for the club, lads, because there's huge breaking news this morning. Morris Brosnan had this in the 42, that Oisín Mullen is going to Geelong to team up with my buddy Zach Toohey and Mark O'Connor. You know, a surprise considering we thought he kind of turned it down, Lee. You know, you kind of thought he'd gone past that, you know, stage where he's going to be recruited and he was going to stay in GA. That was what all the noise coming out of Mayo was. It's just he must have got an offer he couldn't refuse, and it looks like he's going now.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that, isn't it? It's a huge loss, obviously, to Mayo. I mean, that goes without saying at this point. But, like, just to the GAA in general, I mean, he was Young Player of the Year last year. I'd be surprised if he didn't get it again this year. And, like, from a neutral's point of view, you know, when I'm, like, me, who would have nothing, you know, interest in Connacht or any personal relation to it, like, when I see Mayo v Galway or just whatever, you always keep an eye out for them players, the exciting players, you know, the ones that make it entertaining, like, as a neutral's point of view. So it's just sad, you know, just that we'll be deprived of that, you know, for however how long. And hopefully, I suppose he thought he'd give himself another year, back-to-back All-Ireland finals for him. He sort of, was he rushed back from injury from the semi-final? I don't think so. He was probably all right. But yeah, I mean, it must, like you say, an offer you can't refuse. It's a chance to be a professional. The sunny weather, and, like, you know, he'd thrive over there. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, everything that he's known for, you know, his athleticism and things like that, like, I just think he's made for it.
Yeah, I agree. The speed of him, the physique, I think he'll be a huge success over there. Well, in a small way, like, I mean, obviously he's a huge loss. I love watching him. He doesn't know anything but 100 miles an hour going straight, you know, up the field. And he's exciting to watch. You get off your seat when he gets his hands on the ball. He wants to make things happen. And he's an anecdote to the kind of boring sideways football we've seen. He is just direct and everything is 100 miles an hour. I suppose, obviously a huge loss. I was thinking, like, Mayo, if they wanted to lose anyone, they'd lose a defender, Niall, because they have so many of them. Like, you know, they still have Páirc Ó'Hara, Brendan Harris and Lee Keegan as a possible full back line, with Enda Hessian, you know, there as a fourth. And in the half back line, they still have Paul Durkin, Stephen Cohen and Owen McLaughlin. You know, so, like, I mean, and Hessian can cover the half back line as well. And there's probably a couple more that I'm not even leaving. The point I'm trying to make is that Mayo's problem is not in defence, it's in attack. If they were to lose Tommy Conroy or, you know, Ryan O'Donoghue or something, you know, I'm wondering, would that be as much of a bigger loss for them?
Sure, they were missing Oisín Mullen, wasn't he injured this year for the semi-final against Dublin?
Yeah.
And, you know, Enda Hessian came in that day and did a similar sort of a job. Like, he was nearly one of the breakthrough players of the year in that he just kind of took up from where Oisín Mullen left off. Like, but yeah, as you said, like, Mayo, they've always had brilliant defenders, this team, like, for the last 9 or 10 years, really. Like, and I know they were all kind of worried that the worry was always there with Oisín Mullen, wasn't it? That the AFL were kind of lurking, and, like, as Lee said, he is that kind of the prototype AFL player, like, so athletic and so strong and so skillful as well. Like, and, like, he will be a huge loss for Mayo, but they probably will be able to cope with it, as you say, just because they have so many good defenders. It's probably the forwards that they're maybe missing out a small bit on.
Yeah, no, and I agree. Centre back was going to be his position. I'm not too sure. I'm not sold of Oisín Mullin always in the full back line from a couple of different games, both against Tyrone actually. But as a centre back, bombing up the field, he was, you know, absolutely sensational. Kevin Moran retired this week as well. You know, probably not a surprise. The last 2 years since Liam Cahill came in, not like Liam Cahill was freezing him out or anything. He just, at his age, he probably didn't fit Liam Cahill's style. High energy, high octane, you know, up and down the field. You know, he just probably didn't have the legs to do it.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, if he was in his prime, he would have probably
been the
ideal player for the Liam Cahill kind of system. But, like, Kevin Moore, like, where do you start with him, really? Like, he's just... Like the stats he has, like from having played, I think he played, it was between 2008 and 2018, he never missed a championship game. The only reason he missed one then was because he was suspended. Like he played something like 140 games for Waterford. He was nominated for 6 All-Stars. He was even nominated for Hurler of the Year in 2017.
Was he? Yeah.
That was probably his best year. But like
in midfield in 17, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That his best position. It's hard to know. Wing back didn't suited him.
Well, he played in every line of the field for Waterford. Like, and I suppose my standout memory of Kevin Moran, and it's something that I'll never forget, is the 2013 I think it was the quarter, or it was a qualifier they played against Kilkenny, or against Kilkenny in Semple Stadium, and it was a really hot evening, and like it was so tight, and Kilkenny were winning the whole way up, and up until with 2 minutes left in the game, Kevin Moran stands up and he got a point from about 70 yards out, an unbelievable point to bring Waterford within one. And then about 2 minutes later, he was down the line, he was hooked, and there was Kilkenny lads, was two or three of them chasing after him, and he came back and stuck it over the bar, and it was just an unbelievable point. And it kind of just summed up Kevin Moran as a man, because that game went to extra time and he had left so much out there, and it was a hot evening obviously, and he wasn't even able to, I think he came out for the first few minutes of extra time, but he had to go off. And I'll never forget the commentator on RT radio, he said, I don't know where I was going, but he said that Kevin Moran's on the sideline getting sick, he had no more left to give.
Right.
And I remember the same thing happened to him one day, they played Tipperary as well, he just had to go off because he had no more left to give. And I think it just kind of sums up him as a player, doesn't it? Like, that's the type of lad he was. He left everything out there, and like, he mightn't have been the most stylish or maybe the most gifted hurler, but he was such a hard worker, such a tough player, and like what a teammate for everyone who's played with him down through the years. Like, he's a man you want beside you.
That happened, you reminded me of it, we didn't mention, that happened with Tommy Walsh with Tullerone and O'Loughlin Gales, where the last 10 minutes or something, and he went down and he had to just go have enough. I've nothing here. I think he was playing out in the half forward line. No wonder, he bloody man's 38.
Yeah, and the stands that day in Nolan Park, I think everyone got up between Tullerone and O'Loughlin Gales, and they gave him a standing ovation as he left the field. Like, but... like, that's just the type of lads that they are, you know, hurlers that you'd have so much respect for, like, for all that they've, like, that isn't that the type of player you want beside you, just a lad who's going to leave it all out there, like.
Yeah, no, exactly, you're nearly bringing a tear to my eye, that's what they say. Although, like, I mean, I suppose if Kevin Moran's at the stage where he's getting sick, do you ever get sick from a really hard training session?
No, it's not something that has ever happened to me either now, but...
seen lads getting sick from a hard training session, but yeah. I don't know.
Some lads, when they're on to beer now the night before, they'd be struggling the next morning. But I think it is. It's something that some lads just have that. Like, I remember I used to do a bit of cross-country running, and there'd be a few lads on the team with me who'd be, like, every race they'd run, they'd get sick at the end of it. But some lads kind of just... maybe we're not pushing ourselves enough.
Well, you're a greyhound. Am I allowed to announce that your big TV appearance coming up here shortly, no?
She might as well. You've gone there now.
A show that I like... can't say that I always record it or look for it, but I'll never flick past Ireland's Fittest Family without stopping and watching it, because I like the show. Your family's on it. When are you on the television? It started already.
Yeah, the first week started last Sunday, and we're on the 14th. Yeah, that's Sunday week now we're on. So yeah, it'll be good to watch it. It was it pushed me to my limits anyway.
You can't say anymore. Can you tell us who your coach was?
I can't tell you anything.
No? Anna Geary. Come on!
I'd be killed, Wally.
All right. Well, look forward to tuning in on the 14th, you said it was.
14th, yeah, Sunday week.
Right, so Westmead dressing rooms are still closed. Right, so this is a little bit unusual. I think the Dublin dressing rooms as well, Lee, are still closed. And look, we're not going back into this too much because we've been through it for so long that, you know, I can't comprehend it. And then I rang the Westmeath County Board yesterday morning. I was about to, well, I wasn't going to give out, just wanted to find out what was going on. Won't say who I was talking to, but they've released a statement since. So their statement pretty much summed up a lot of the stuff that that I was told. It said, Westmeath GA acknowledged the fact that dressing rooms may be open for those who are vaccinated or in pods of six where this is where there's mixed immunity status. However, the decision has been taken to keep the dressing rooms closed as it is considered unreasonable for club and county officials to have to demand sight of vaccination certificates of players prior to entry to the dressing room area. It would be particularly unfair on those who are not vaccinated to remain outside with their team while their teammates gain entry. So basically, the way I've read that a little bit awkwardly, the county board said they're not comfortable asking for vaccine certs. They're not comfortable allowing whatever percentage of vaccinated players into the dressing room while their teammates stay out in the cold. And I was going to give out shite about the Westmeath County Board, Lee, but I think that's perfectly, you know, understandable. So I suppose the issue here is the rules that the county boards have been sent down. They're completely unfair. County board officials should not be checking medical records of players. It's complete nonsense. And thankfully, anecdotally, a lot of county boards are just allowing them in to shower and they're not checking their certs as diligently. Westmeath County Board obviously want to follow by the complete letter of the law. And if you're following by the letter of the law, I don't think I'd feel right, Lee, about letting certain lads in and leaving other lads out.
Well, it's not the way that it's done here in the north anyway. I mean, there's certainly nothing to do with you need a COVID or a vaccine passport or anything like that or a certificate to be allowed into the dressing rooms. It's just the dressing rooms are open and it's up to each club nearly individually. Not even the county board at this stage. I haven't heard of any that say outright you're not allowed to keep them open. For our last couple of games, we were allowed to use the dressing rooms and it was a throwback, really, you know, straight back in, the smell of deep heat, everything. It was just the way it used to be. So, yeah, Westmeath, I can see why they're singling that out in particular as being the reason, you know, like you say, following the letter of the law, as it were, rather than saying that it's not that they don't want people in the dressing rooms. It's just because they don't want to alienate those who are maybe against the vaccines and things like that. But, like, fair enough to them for saying it because they could have easily have shifted the blame in terms of we're just copying government guidelines because that's what they do for restaurants and things like that or pubs. You know, you have to have this certificate. So it's just a carbon copy of them sort of policies. You know, don't even blame us. But they came out and they said it. It's obviously what they believe in. So, I mean, fair play to them.
Yeah. No, well, that's it. So, like, I mean, it's hard to be too critical of them. I did, like, I mean, there is an element of county boards taking this on their own back because I suppose as the conversation went on, I said, why do you even have to check them? Jesus, just let them in and get a shower. And then the answer was, well, look, cases are very high at the moment, you know, and then you're starting to get to the bottom of some of it as well. You know, like, I mean, that's their worries, you know, without I'm not going to get into too much of that. It's just if they're sticking by the letter of the law, I do agree with Westmeath County Board. It is very, 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 very unfair to leave lads out. It's also very, 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 very unfair to have lads play a county final and not let them in get a shower in the freezing cold or tug out in the freezing cold. So you have to weigh up which is fairer. And I'd be 100% coming down on the lines is get into those dressing room lads and get warm and get a shower and whatever it is like that. So I suppose that's it kind of a little bit explained. Kieran Kingston has shaken up his backroom team, Niall. So Gary Deegan's in, Christy O'Connor's out and Cunningham's out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they left of their own bat, or we don't know what happened behind the scenes. Were they told to resign? I don't know. They've both said that they're finished up. As it just so happens, Gary Deegan, he was involved with the high performance boxing, did great work there. He was actually in with Kieran Kingston when Kieran Kingston had his first stint when he won the two Munsters with them. And he's a sports psychologist. So I think John Myler finished up with Gary Deegan and now he's back in. So he's a big one. Pat Mulcahy is in as well. And you will tell me the other one. Furlong, Noel Furlong.
He was the minor manager last year, Furlong, yeah. Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd say the most exciting one really is to see Pat Mulcahy back in there. Like I know as a player, like he was always when Dermot O'Sullivan was fullback, Pat Mulcahy was there on his right hand side in the corner, like, and I suppose the band is sort of getting back together there. But he was just a brilliant sort of a a real tigerish sort of a cornerback, and won for Cork, won loads of titles for Newtown Shandrum as well. So that's kind of a bit of a buzz about that appointment there. But your man Gary Deegan, he had some sort of small role. Maybe it was just he was in once or twice, but he was in with the Tipperary Hurlers when they won in 2019 under Liam Sheedy.
He was in with the Jim Gavin's Dublin team for a while as well.
Yeah, so Kieran Kingston, like when he had him in before and he's bringing him back in now, he obviously has a lot of faith in him. And I suppose to shake things up, like Cork weren't too far off last year, but they're looking to make the little marginal improvements that they need big improvements to catch Limerick.
So sports psychology seems to have kind of evolved a little bit in the GAA League, and they're more like in the Caroline Currid's kind of mould, where they're almost like an intermediary between the players. They're a shoulder to lean on. They're, you know, someone that's not within the management team that you can talk to, and sports psychology will obviously come into those conversations, but it's not necessarily the sports psychology. I don't know, like my experiences in the 90s was just kind of, you'd be laughing out loud at some of the stuff. It doesn't seem to be these, they don't seem to be these group sessions. They seem to be one-on-ones with players that want help. And I think that's the best way to do it, because there's still loads of players that are very cynical about sports psychologists.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's the sort of thing, it only really works if you want it to work, and if you think it's something that you personally will benefit from, then you go and talk to someone about it, you know, and see the benefits that could come from it. If you force someone to sit down, you know, and talk through your problems, and or you have to come out and say what you're thinking of or what issues you may have, even if you don't have them, you know, you're going to be, you'll feel trapped in a corner. And then a lot of them can be, I mean, like, not all sports psychologists are the same, you know, some are better than others. And if you get a bad one, or one who you just can't relate to, then that's just going to tarnish your whole theory on it anyway. So I don't know, like, I mean, I think as players get older, they seem to get more interested in it, you know, as the seasons start to tick on. I interviewed Michael Murphy last week, and he was so fascinated by it, because his whole theory with the whole thing was that everyone's S&C at county level is pretty much at the same now, you know. It's sort of, everyone's can peak at that level, the information's there, the experts are there, and it's been done before. And he says, skill wise, you know, it's much more the same as well. You know, we've got the top footballers throughout the years, and then combine that with the S&C, and they're performing at this incredibly high level. But he says the one thing that's still, it's not completely perfected and it's not universal, it is the sports psychology. So he went and studied it as a master's, just for his own benefit, nearly more than anything else. And it's something that he looks very strongly into. And, you know, you're not going to argue with someone like him, but that's purely because he wanted it and he opted for that. And if you're against it, then yeah, you shouldn't be forced to go down that route.
Is he pro or against messages taped to your wrists?
Asked him about this. Yeah, I did. I was like, help me prove a situation here. But I just basically said about the Conor Myler thing, and how he wrote Sweat Courage on his wrist and the tape on his wrist and stuff. And he just confirmed what actually I'd said on the podcast, that it's an old trigger technique to try to reset yourself. And sports psychology, that's not the only way to do it. There's loads of different ways. But it's all about resetting yourself and focusing on what's important now. A bit like that, the tea and toast story, like that, to them that resonates the meaning of, like, next ball, you know, next situation. That's it's very basic, actually. So he didn't say he does it, but he says it's definitely a form of triggers, and he says he has different ones, but he didn't tell me which.
Because I thought about this after our conversation about it the last time, Lee, when I was driving home in my car, and I was thinking about this trigger and bringing yourself back into the now. And the more I thought about it, it was like, say, so obviously you're in Croke Park and you've kicked a wide, for example, and, you know, your brain scrambles and you look at your wrist and now it resets you or whatever. So it's obviously a technique when everything's going on wild around you to look at it and reset yourself. And then I was thinking, if everything's going scrambled all around you, who says you're going to remember to look at it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, it's habitual at this stage. And I think that's what sports psychologists teach.
But if you remember to look at it, can you not remember to tell yourself, here, cop on here now?
But that is it, though, because the words don't actually mean anything, really. Or the picking up the blade of grass and throwing it away, it doesn't actually mean anything. But because you remember to do that, you're remembering to stay in the moment and stay calm. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, you have an answer for everything on this one. I'll get you next week.
I think Lee should be a sports psychologist.
He's a great way, very good way of explaining it now to a cynic, yes. Even an old cynic, a 43-year-old cynic. Yeah, he's an answer for everything. Henry has added to his backroom team. It's a very, very small backroom team. It was two, now it's four.
Yeah, it's Kevin Lally, who is the... he's won, I think it's three county titles in a row with St. Thomas's, and he was involved with the Galway minor team when they won the All-Ireland as well. But he was actually in the frame before Henry came from nowhere to take the job, but when they were picking their manager at the start, who was going to be the next Galway manager, Kevin Lally was one of the main men, and a lot of people from Galway were eager that he would get the job. So it definitely seems like a great appointment for Henry to make. And Damien Joyce, I have a bit of experience with him because we had a training session. We went out to Capitagal, which is his club, last year, and he took us for a wall ball session. And I'd say it was one of the liveliest 40 minutes I've ever done in my life. He's a former Galway captain, but that was back around 2009-10. But he was still playing with his club up until... I think he was still on the panel this year, but an injury kept him out of the championship for Capitagal. But as 40, 41-year-old men go, the man is absolutely ripped, and he's as fit and as dedicated and as committed as any player you would have ever come across. But he's respected as a coach as well. So
right. So it's a young backroom team, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Damien Joyce is a young man anyway. And isn't it Richie O'Neill? Yeah, and Richie O'Neill is the other lad. Henry brought with him from Kilkenny. He was his coach when he was with Ballyhale. I think he was a sub Kilkenny goalkeeper a good few years ago. But I think Henry was eager that he'd get a few Galway lads in with him, and he definitely seems to have got the best of them there.
Yeah, exactly, because it always is a risk when you go to another county and you get selectors from that county, and you're basing it on recommendations, and sure, they might not be great. I've seen it in Leash.
I think he actually played Fitzgibbon Cup with Damien Joyce down in Waterford IT. Right. So there's the hurling world is small, I suppose.
Very good. It probably is. Last one before we get into part two is, I saw this last week, Lee. I'll start with you. I want your opinion on this as well, Niall. Is the Roscommon County Final, Pierce's and Clonagale, and the referee got a county medal afterwards, after the match. So he went up into the stand and got presented with a medal. You see in the Champions League a lot, right? Don't the referees team get medals and stuff like that? He had a good game in the game, and David Goff was tweeting about this. Obviously a referee, so he'd be very biased. A referee who would probably love to go up and get a medal after an All-Ireland and wave to the crowd, David, probably would. Following on from a fine performance in the Roscommon County Final on TG Cahir, referee Patrick McTiernan was presented with his medal in the stands post-match. Every county should be urged to follow this example. It's a big day for the officials too. Just wondering what you think, if this should become a tradition in the GAA or not. I'm kind of torn on it. I think it's great if a referee has a good game, but a referee has a bit of a shocker. It could be a dangerous game walking up through the crowd into the stand.
No, it definitely can be. Is that the same referee that was doing the keepy uppy? He's on TV.
That's him, yeah, yeah.
He knew the cameras were on. I was thinking I would totally do that as well. No, let me think. If I was a referee and that was my involvement in the sport that I love, then I would be very competitive in that sport in my field. So I want to be the best referee. And you be the best referee by refereeing the best game. So in that county, getting to be at the club, senior final, and you're the man in charge of that. At the end of it, having something to show for it, I suppose, is really good, because you're obviously the best referee that season. To get selected for that is my thinking on it, in terms of competition and being involved in the sport. So maybe, is the medal a little bit different? Is it exactly like a county medal? Is he a county champion? I don't think they really take it that much difference. I mean, it probably does no harm. And in the sense that there's maybe a shortage of referees, particularly up here, if it incentivizes it at all, then it's a benefit.
Yeah. It's hard to know. You see in the Champions League, they give losers medals. So the losers team goes up first, and it almost feels like this is a build-up. Then the referees might get it first, then the losers team, and it's a build-up to the winning team coming up. In GAA, losers don't go up and get medals. You'd see the referee would be going up before the cup presentation. Imagine a county champion only winning it for the first time in 50 years. Would you come on? The referee... I do think they should. I'd be very surprised if they don't get a plaque to acknowledge the fact they've refereed a county final or something like that. I don't particularly agree with them going up and getting a medal around their necks, but I definitely think if they're not getting some sort of recognition and something for their mantelpiece to say they referee the county final, All-Ireland final, Leinster final, I think that's disgraceful that they don't get something for their house, you know, as an acknowledgement. I'm torn on whether they go up before the team into the Hogan stand and get a medal.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one. Like, you'd wonder, maybe is it a thing where, like, if a referee, like, do you know, if a referee is a bad game, I'd say the last thing they'd want to do,
they could get booed.
The last thing you'd want is to go up, like, after having a bad game, maybe the crowd are on your back and then you're going up and getting a medal. Like, that just wouldn't really work. Like, but they should definitely get recognised. Like, it's probably enough. It's an award in itself, maybe, for the referee to get these big games. But anything to, like, maybe sort of glamorise it, to kind of incentivise people to become referees. Because I know, like, there's always texts going out from our own club. There's a shortage of referees. We don't have people to referee this game. So they definitely should be, I suppose, treated with the respect that they deserve. But any referee who's doing kick-ups before a game, he deserves a medal.
He did a few soccer kick-ups before the game. Again, just fast-track ex-intercounty players into intercounty referees, and I'll join the programme. Fast-track, two-week intensive programme, and I'll be ready for my intercounty league debut. Right, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll come back in part two. We're going to talk about Durlas Óg and Turles Sarsfields. So we spoke a little bit on Monday about Turles Sarsfields Academy, Durlas Óg, and how they're complete separate clubs and wear different colours and have different club grounds. We thought it was a very unusual situation. So I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Cian Tracy. Cian hurls with Turles Sarsfield's B team, and he also coaches with Durlas Óg. Cian, how's it going?
Good, Colm, and yourself?
What the hell's going on here, Cian? Can you dumb this down for the rest of the country? Because this is obviously very, very, you know, there's nothing unusual about this for you, but explain how this all came about.
Yeah, I suppose, Colin, for people in Turles, it's very natural, or for kids growing up in Turles. Basically, in 1979, Durlas Óg was set up, and at the time, the underage structures in Turles were a little bit all over the place. Turles Sarsfields had a little bit of underage, Lucre Hailty had a bit of underage, Fenleys, all the different clubs. And basically, in 1979, Turles Sarsfields, Turles Fenleys, Rahalty and Kickhams came together and decided that they had to put a little bit of structure on the underage setup in Turles. And lads like brother Con Higgins and Mick Carroll, who's still there, our president, Michael Kennedy, Jimmy Coppinger, lads like that, came together and basically put together a juvenile club that would be a standalone club within the town with no affiliation to any adult club, right, per se. And I suppose as the years went on, it became a really successful club in its own right. In 1990, its grounds in Paughton Óg were opened. And from there on, the kind of thing snowballed and it became a really, really successful club. But as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of people now know, it is a standalone independent club with no actual affiliation to any adult club.
Right. So, like, I mean, this is what's happened. So the Durlas Óg is a standalone. What Durlas Óg play up until under 17, that's pretty much their senior team. And then their players have to get a transfer to Turles Sarsfields, am I right?
That's right. They can transfer once they finish the under 17 grade. Up to last year in Tipperary, club hurling would have been under 16. They then go on and they transfer to whichever club they choose within the parish. So that could be Turles Gaels or it could be Turles Sarsfields.
Right. So right now in the town, there's Turles Sarsfields and there's Turles Gaels, and Turles Gaels is made up of the Kickhams, the Turles Fenleys, you know, the teams that originally went into this agreement to feed all their juveniles into Durlas Óg, right? So now they've broken away and they have their own juvenile set up. So pretty much effectively right now, Durlas Óg is Turles Sarsfield's juvenile club. Would I be right in saying that?
It's not. It's, as I said, it's a standalone club, and there are boys who decide at the end of under 17 to go to Turles Gaels. It's not per se, it's basically like a primary school that has strong links and strong coaching links to Turles Sarsfields. But there are a number of players who would go the other way and would go to neighbouring clubs, and some over the years have gone to Holy Cross, Ballycahill and Loughmore, Castleline. It's not per se that every single boy who finishes at under 17 goes and plays for Turles Sarsfields.
Right, but like a percentage wise, how many would go on to play for Thurles Saracens?
To be honest, Colm, you are looking at a strong percentage. You're probably looking at 90% plus go on and play for Thurles Sarsfield. Like, there are a number of reasons for that. A lot of the coaching done within the teams in Thurles Oak is done by guys who would have played for Thurles Oak and then gone on and represented Sarsfield. And if you just look at the coaching structure that we have at the moment, at under 13 level, you've Rocky O'Dowd as the manager, Conor Gleeson, who captain Tip in the All-Ireland in 97 is there, Paddy Moore, who'd be a great underage coach in Thurles there. You move on to the 15s, Redzer O'Grady, a legendary figure in both Fenleys and Thurles Sarsfields, is there with John Lawler, who would have been hurled for years with Sarsfields. At 17 level, you have Tommy Maher, and Tonto Lanigan, Andy Ryan, guys like that. So there are strong links with Sarsfields, but per se it's a standalone club that has its own merits, its own culture, its own identity, its own jersey, its own top table, its own infrastructure and its own funding. So it is a standalone club. In 2013, it got senior club rights in terms of it now has voting rights at county board adult level.
Yeah.
So it is a club in its own right. Yeah, there are strong links to Thurles Sarsfields, but a lot of players over the years, a lot of really, really good players like the Gary Coppinger and lads like that would have gone and played with the Fenleys and gone and played with the Gales. And, so it's not exclusively an underage academy for Thurles Sarsfields.
So, like, I suppose the way I look for it, I'm just looking at this from the outside. It looks like, the Thurles Fenleys, the Thurles Kickhams, Thurles Sarsfields went into this agreement. And whoever went in on the Fenleys and Kickham side, didn't really have their head screwed on, because Thurles Sarsfields are obviously the big glamour club in Tipperary in the 50s and 60s and, the successful club. So they all pooled their juveniles together. They all come up through the juvenile ranks in one club, Thurles Oak. Who do you think these young lads are going to want to play with when they hit 17? They're being coached by the Thurles Sarsfields legends that have played. It was a ridiculous deal, really, for the Fenleys and the Kickhams to go into back in 1971 or 79.
Yeah, in 1979, Colm, like the likes of Tommy O'Dowd, who would have been a Fenleys man, John Ryan for the Kickhams, they were all involved in this merger of clubs or this creation of Thurles Oak. And for them, the idea and really the strong principle behind Thurles Oak is to allow young players in the Thurles town, which is a hotbed of hurling, as everyone around the country knows, develop into the best players, the best people they can be, in order to then choose at the end where they're going to go. I know for people out there maybe who aren't from Thurles, it looks like maybe it's stacked in Thurles Sarsfields' favour.
Yeah.
But in recent years, success has come to Thurles Sarsfields. But you have to look at it, Colm. From 1971 to 2005, Thurles Sarsfields didn't win a senior county championship, 31 years. So there's a huge barren period there where a lot of players from Thurles Oak went to Rehalty. A lot of them went to Fenleys. Fenleys won a county junior A title in 2003 with the Lawlers, Gary Coppinger, Redzer was coaching them at the time, Michael Grogan, the manager. The other clubs have been very strong. We are going through a golden period in Thurles Oak at the moment. But we're very, very aware, Colm, that won't last forever either. We went 31 years from 1989 to 2020 with no under-12 county title. Went 9 years from 2006 to 2015 with no under-14 title. And 6 years from Ronan Maher captain the under-16s in 2011 till 2017 when Darragh Stakelam and Paddy Creed, the current senior players, were playing. There was barren periods there and there will continue to be. We're in brilliant success. We're having great success underage at the moment. But as you know, that just won't last forever.
You mentioned Thurles Oak got senior status. Why did they want that? Did that create tension between Thurles Oak and Thurles Sarsfields?
Not really. I suppose in order for Thurles Oak to be able to have kind of voting rights and to be allowed allocation of tickets for Tipperary inter-county games, they needed to be a senior affiliated club. But the idea of going as a senior affiliated club was never that they were going to go past under 17. That's vital, and it's something I mentioned to you yesterday, that, and you mentioned it at the start of the show, that our under 17 team, in essence, is treated as our senior team within the club,
yeah,
within Thurles Oak Club, or under 15s and under 13s. And we have a great management structure and coaching structure because we can give our best lads to those clubs. In clubs, in some of the rural clubs and other urban clubs around Tipperary, their best guys are naturally with their senior hurling team or senior football team or intermediate, whatever their top team is. So that's, I think, what gives us a huge advantage, that we have our best guys. As I mentioned, the under 17s, Tommy Maher is a selector. He was the manager of Sarsfields when they won a four in a row senior from 2014 to 2017.
Right.
Like, not too many underage clubs would have that quality of coach. As I said, Paddy Moore, Andy Ryan, Tonto Lanigan, Redzor, John Lawler. They just wouldn't have that. It wouldn't be available to them. And I think that's what makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes a big difference. So, like, I mean, they come up to Turles Sarsfields at under 19 level and they've been exposed to coaching maybe that other clubs wouldn't have, you know, at underage. Because obviously Turles Oaks, you know, flagship team is the under 17s.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to, like, if you look at it this way, like, and people are talking about the dominance Turles Oaks are having at this current period. We played the under 17, as you say, the flagship underage, the minor county final 2 weeks ago against Holy Cross Ballycat, a rural club who are doing huge work underage, Don Ryan and guys like that. We were 4 points down at the last water break, and it's credit to our guys in Turles Oaks that they pulled it back and won by 2 points. Other teams are really close to us. This isn't a case of Turles Oaks walking county finals. Some of the rural clubs, some of the other urban clubs are really, really close and they're on our coattails. And this has just been an exceptional year. But as you know, Callum, you need huge luck and huge, I suppose, resources pooled into and huge hard work. And there's massive hard work going on underage in Turles Oaks that makes them successful. It's not just kind of luck, draw or numbers or town. You know, if that was the case, it would be all urban teams playing in county finals. You see Holy Cross, you see in the senior hurling final, Loughmore, Castellini. Rural places who just have extraordinary teams, extraordinary work at those clubs that are bringing them. And there's only a pocket of ball between any of us on any given day.
Yeah. Just to finish up, Keane, why not just call it Turles Oaks and be done with it and clear it up for everyone?
Because, as I said, it's Turles Oaks. It's Turles Oaks, it's a club in its own right, and it has huge tradition. And you think back to all those great players who've come through, the Pádraic Mairs, Ronan Mairs, Lark Corbett, Michael Kemp, Burke, all these guys. There's huge pride in the club, Colm, and I think people around the country can empathise with that, that we've massive pride in Turles Oaks as a standalone club. We've massive pride in what we've created, in the spirit, in the unity, in just the collectiveness that we have in Turles Oaks, and it would be a shame for us to ever lose our individuality and our own culture and our own identity. And I think people are very, very strong within our club. We're delighted to be supported by the other senior clubs in the town, and maybe particularly that link with Turles Arses that we're very proud of. But we want to stand on our own 2 feet, and we want to be, I suppose, in essence, our own boss. And, you know, and it's been fruitful. The main thing that we want is these young lads to progress, whatever age grade they go at, whatever, wherever they go when they finish Turles Oaks. And you just look, just to finish up, people often talk about, you know, Turles Oaks in the 13A, the 15A, 17A, and it's all about your flagship teams or your flagship players. Turles Arses is playing the county senior final next Sunday against Loughmore Castellini. Paul Maher in 2006 played on the under 14 C team when he was up to the age. He'd be walking behind the Sean Tracy Pipe Band playing cornerback in the senior county final next Sunday. So it isn't all about Billy McCarthy the same, played in a 12C county final in 2006. These lads, whether they're A players, B players, C players, they're developed to the best of their ability by the coaching and the structures within Turles Oaks in order for them to become the best hurlers they can in the future for whichever team they choose to go to.
One final question there while it's in my head. Is there a little bit of light pressure put on players coming up through Turles Oaks to play with Turles Arses? Maybe not direct pressure, but, you know, through the coaches, through the big link to Turles Arsfields, that these are young fellas. Without them even knowing it, there's an expectation there that the good lads, now forget about lads, you know, that the best lads want to play with Turles Arsfields, and that's almost expected of them.
I wouldn't say there's an expectation. I wouldn't think there's any pressure that comes from the clubs. I think where the pressure comes from, and if there is any pressure, if these guys are going, you know, when you're 13, 14, 15, what are you doing? You're going to see games. You're going to see the likes of Ronan Mair. You're going to see the likes of Pádraic Mair playing games for Turles Arses, and you want to emulate them. We're very lucky in Turles to have guys like that who are role models, massive role models, and players who get so much respect from our young players. And I think that's why players want to follow and want to emulate their heroes, per se. You know, I'm sure it's the same in Liverpool, and you can follow in Liverpool in the soccer. The boys growing up in Liverpool, they want to play with Liverpool, okay? Or in Manchester, they want to play with Manchester United. Or in Ballygunner, they're watching Daisy Hutchinson and the Mahoneys. They want to play for Ballygunner. And I think that's just natural. But I wouldn't think there's any pressure put on by any coaches or any of the people in the hierarchy in Turles Oaks to play for Turles Arses.
Keen, thanks very much for taking the call. I appreciate it.
Brilliant. Thanks, Colm.
All right, so Keen is obviously Turles Arsfields and he's Turles Oaks. So to get another side, another perspective on the situation. We're joined by Morgan Lanigan, who's been working with the Turles Gales Club. That's the other club in Turles, obviously. They're a juvenile club. Morgan's been working with them for 14 years, seven as chairman, and he hurled with Turles Fenleys back in the day. How's it going, Morgan?
Not too bad, Colin. All good, yeah.
We were talking to Cian there, and I was making the point to him that this arrangement of Durlis Oge back in the 70s when it was arranged seemed like a very, very bad deal for the Kickhams and the Fenleys and a very good deal for Turles Sarsfields.
Well, no, back at the time, a few men came together and drove on the idea. And like, even in these times, it's hard to find people willing to put in the work. So I'd say when they had the energy and they had the idea, there wasn't too many to object to it. And going back over those decades, the 70s, late 70s, 80s and 90s, look, lads were able to make their own mind up and they went back to their own different clubs like their Kickhams and Rehaltys and Fenleys. And, you know, they were able to survive in different guises at different levels. There's strong traditions in those various clubs. You know, Rehalty were minor champions once upon a time. The famous Niall Quinn's heritage lies with Rehalty. The Kickhams, I won't shamefully plug, but my own uncle was a captain when Tipperary raised the intermediate All-Ireland, and there was a couple of Kickhams players who were playing senior at the time in the 60s. You know, and the Fenleys then, they probably produced better at a later stage winning a County Junior A title. So it was working to an extent, you know, at the time. But look, times changed, you know, Colm.
Yeah. And were you losing many players that you would have expected to come back to you guys after under 17 and they were choosing Turles Sarsfields after it?
Well, there was a kind of, it was being seen that Rehalty and Kickhams came together in the early millennium, and that because their numbers were reducing, so they were starting to see it first. The Fenleys were kind of on an up curve in the late 90s. They had reached a couple of county finals and won a couple of mid titles, and they were kind of on the crest of the wave, so they didn't really notice as much. Oddly enough, the success when they finally won that county title in 2003, that was the definite peak of what was a very high wave, because within 2 years, unfortunately, I had the sad grace of being captain when we played our last match, and we failed to come out of the dressing rooms at half time due to a lack of players. And that's in the space of 2 years of being County Junior A champion. That's the sad reality of it. As players, even that were in that club, had moved to Sarsfields and abroad, I must note. But there was no younger players coming through.
Right. But they were going into Durlis Oge, but not coming out the other side of it, is the point I'm making, I suppose.
Yes, they were. That's true, yes, yeah.
Right.
And that's probably been more so the case the last 10, 15 years, you know. You really start to see that we weren't... Actually, when I initially done my coaching course, I was intending to go up and become part of the Durlis Oge coaching team, because we, at the time, we were a combination called the Turles Kickhams Rehalty Fenleys, and we were thinking, like, right, we need to get somebody up there. But then a decision was made to get our own juvenile club going, which, you know, which was a big decision and wasn't taken lightly, and a lot of work has gone in since.
Yeah, so just so people listening, so now you have the Kickhams, the Fenleys, you have Rehalty, and ye all joined together as Turles Gales, and you've broken away from Durlis Oge and have your own juvenile. Now, apparently, have ye broken the terms of the 70s agreement to have your own juvenile club outside of Durlis Oge and Turles?
Well, there was a lot of negotiation had to go into this, because, well, obviously the stakeholders weren't around when we were coming to the board with this plan. It was a special situation that was granted to Turles. I don't know of anywhere else at the time, anyway. Definitely, maybe there is different situations across the country at the moment. We weren't getting players, you know.
Yeah.
Three clubs had to come together, and it wasn't because of, hey, let's go and win a title here. It was basically survival, you know. From those three clubs, we managed to field a team that year, you know, a good panel at the time. And what we could see, there were an aging team as well, you know, with not young players. Sorry, there wasn't young players there to come through. And technically, the terms were probably broken. And yeah, but it was a necessity. You know?
Right, it just had to be. So what's your thoughts on it now? Turles Gaels, obviously, you're starting from the bottom up with lower numbers. What would you like to see, you know, the situation being, you know, with Durlis Oak? Would you like them just to join up with Turles Sarsfields and be done with it? How would you like to see the situation?
Well, kind of like from our point of view, so look, around mid-Tipperary in that, so they could be considered like Fianna Fáil and Fianna Gael, like, you know, they're different families in both clubs, but they're all supporting each other, you know. But no, in seriousness, like they are seen as the one. But I do know the strong traditions that's in both clubs, you know, and it'll never come to pass. Now they do have senior status in Durlis Oak, you know, which is something they've been using in the last few years, and so that's just not going to happen, you know. I suppose for us as a club, What we want and we haven't kind of gotten so far is kind of protection. I mean, you're talking over 100 players transferred from our club to theirs for various reasons since we established. And a couple of times there was a big wave of them in a group of 10. And, you know, we didn't get any help there. We now are aware of a ruling that can assist us where a club can't be left with no team, you know, if players are transferred. Just little protections like that, because I can tell you, there's great work going on in both clubs inside in Turles, and especially ours, we're learning a lot by, and we're really at our best now at the moment. I know we went into the schools ourselves, you know, clubs do avail of grants. Well, we went into the convent schools, I did it personally myself for 2 years, and we're after seeing the fruits of that labour. We've got great group at under 9 and under 11. And we just want to be left to our own, and we'll crack on, you know, with a bit of help maybe from others around. Look, the tradition in Durlis Oak is strong, and we admire it, because some of us, I heard there myself, and our cousins and neighbours and friends that are up there. The tradition in Mid-Tipperary, if you put Mid-Tipperary in the map of the GAA, like, it's small, but it's absolutely massive. The clubs in Mid-Tipperary, the way they push each other and drive each other, because obviously it's the fact of the success that has brought this to the media attention, you know. And well, I know I've personally coached players on every team up there, and some of them won their first medals with us. And you know, it's something that we're always, you'll always go, geez, if only players had stayed on, where would we be now? Like, you know, we do have success ourselves, you know. It's just like in every other parish, you have the rule there to protect your team, you know, that player can't just go up and move and leave, you know.
Yeah. And that's not that's not there in Turles. They can just freely move around.
Well, because you have the parish, you know, once you're within the parish. But we have been made aware of a rule now that can protect, as I mentioned there earlier, that can protect, because we had we won an under 12 county title, hurling title, the first ever in 2019. And a couple of the players went to move, and that meant that we weren't able to field the following year as a team.
Right.
We're made aware there's a rule there that can protect that status now, because if you'd imagine all those players that remained with their club and they couldn't, they had no team to field, and it was a lot of work has gone in the meantime, and we now have a team for them. But you know, the rug was completely pulled underneath us, whereas, you know, if you're out somewhere else in some other parish where we're all working hard, they have the protection. Like, you can't just up and decide to leave, because a lot of work, Colin, I'm sure as you're aware of yourself, goes into these things.
Yeah, no, that's true. One other point I was going to make was that apparently at under 19 level, so Durlis Oak finishes at under 17, it's then as Turles Sarsfields at under 19, but at under 19 level, Turles Sarsfields and Durlis Oak, it all gets complicated. Like, I mean, they amalgamate. So Turles Sarsfields are able to have their 19-year-olds and take the best 17-year-olds out of another club, which is supposed to be another club.
Yeah, it's not. Like, I've been involved at a board level in the Cushnan Og for between both Piero Mid and Tip 10 years, and I've been in those meetings where clubs come into amalgamate, and there's always, you're always looking and scrutinising, right? Well, who's the poor club here? What are their numbers? Can they field on their own? You know?
Yeah.
So somebody has to be the wrong term, for want of a better expression, the poor relation. So it's a struggle to see who the poor relation is in this matter. Now, look, we don't see anybody not playing Hurling. But it just doesn't seem, the reason of amalgamations or combos, whatever they're referred to, it was because the team wasn't fielding on their own, you know. So it's an unusual one, definitely. And I know probably teams that are competing in the B will probably query that more. We still have yet to be in, at that level for that age group, you know, due to players leaving. But look, hey, there's great work going on. If we could get some more help, I know in Tipperary we have 4 GDAs and they're doing all that they can. I mean, we have your neighbours up there, Offaly and Michael Dignan, the great work he's doing. He's rightly looking for 6 more. And from what we hear, he's getting 6 more GDAs. Like, where in here, man, the longest? You drive from one end of Tipperary to the other and you'll have a lot of diesel burnt, and we have 4 GDAs covering it. Surely, maybe headquarters, there should be an opening there for a few more players, a few more people in that role. And that would help, because our club isn't the only one in this situation. You have clubs across the county, Rose Green, Clare, and you have maybe Clonmelogue, not so much to such an extent, but clubs that need help on the ground, inside in schools and things. And our 4 GDAs in Tipperary can't cover that, you know, and they need help. They're doing great work as it is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, anyways, Morgan, thanks very much for taking the call and best of luck with Thurles Gaels. I don't think probably too many people listening knew too much about Thurles Gaels, but there is 2 clubs in Thurles, and best of luck with it. I suppose you're just going to be the noisy neighbour, Morgan, and like in every big town, when you're a less successful kind of relation, it's probably going to be a struggle. But I do agree that some sort of protection should be put in place around transfers and players just being able to leave you at the drop of a hat. Morgan, thanks very much for taking the call.
Take care, Colin. Thank you very much. Best of luck to everybody.
Great stuff from Morgan and from Keane there. Hope we cleared up some of that. It's a complicated enough situation, but an interesting one at the same time. Right, we'll leave it there for today. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review. We have a good few county finals on this weekend. It's all starting to hot up, so we'll talk to you all on Monday. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating, and a donkey needs a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing.